finance and economics.
Status economics. Hunger Games. Mass market weight loss drugs will transform what it means to be thin.
Arriving in Stepford, Connecticut, Joanna, protagonist of The Stepford Wives, a horror novel, is dragged to a worker and class at the Simply Stepford Day Spa by a neighbour. The duo are met by 15 identikit women. Their hair, heights and skin colours differ a little. Their waist sizes do not. Each can be no bigger than a British size 8, their waists nipped in by belts and accentuated by 1950s skirts. As some describe it, this is where the world is now heading, owing to the discovery of weight loss drugs. In 3 short years since America's Federal Drug Administration approved these medications, their use has exploded. Novo Nordisk, maker of Ozempic and Wegovy, has become Europe's most valuable company. Eli Lilly, which manufactures Mounjaro, was one of America's best performers last year. And celebrities including Oprah Winfrey and Kelly Clarkson have emerged almost overnight, slimmed down and svelte. Morgan Stanley, a bank, estimates that as many as 9% of Americans will take brand-name versions of weight loss drugs by 2035. That is just the tip of the iceberg. Demand for versions of these medications is only growing. On the subway in New York, Row, a healthcare startup, advises riders to skip the shortages and get access to cheaper versions for as little as $99 a month. Instagram is plastered with advertisements from firms such as Hers and Eden, which target young people by using lowercase brand names and soothing colour schemes. In September, Kourtney Kardashian, a socialite, began selling a capsule through Lem, her supplement firm, which also flogs vaginal probiotic gummies and anti-cellulite pills. The most important consequence of the drug's discovery is well understood. They will improve the health and lives of most of those with access to them. But the understandable rejoicing at the health benefits has been tempered in some quarters by a fear that the drugs will encourage the worst of society's aesthetic impulses, that they will bring about an even fiercer expectation that everyone should conform to contemporary beauty standards, a trend which may come with its own health burden in the form of mental health conditions and disordered eating. People clamour to get on weight loss drugs for aesthetic reasons, as well as owing to health concerns. This is not mere vanity. Evidence of discrimination against fat people is widespread. In Sweden and Mexico, where including a photograph with a CV is common, researchers manipulated images to make identical fictitious job applicants seem fatter or obese. They found that they were significantly less likely to be offered interviews. Petter Lundberg of Lund University and John Corley of Cornell University have compared the wages of thin and fat women, adjusted for education, experience and other factors, in Europe and America respectively, and found that women with obese BMIs earn around 10% less than their peers. The implication of this is stark. For an obese woman earning, say, $80,000, the impact of getting on Ozempic could be more economically consequential than any eventual savings she might make on her health bills. Will weight loss drugs make discrimination worse? Tressie McMillan Cottom, a New York Times columnist, has argued against the notion that Ozempic will cure the moral crisis of fat bodies that refuse to get and stay thin. The implicit promise of the drug is that it can fix what our culture has broken. Her preferred solution, rather than solving obesity with drugs, society should simply stop stigmatizing fat people. Ozempic has won, body positivity has lost, and I want no part of it, lamented Rachel Pick, a writer in The Guardian. Such concerns are fueled by the fact that the body positive movement, which pushes back on the idea that everyone should strive to meet the same body ideal, has been gaining ground. Retailers offer more sizes. It has become common to see clothing displayed on bigger women when shopping online. John Gogliano of Maison Margiela, a luxury fashion house, used models of all sizes at a show in Paris. It is natural to think that in the short term, prejudice against fat people might be reinforced by weight loss drugs. So far, they have mostly been available to the rich, notes Mr. Corley. If being able to lose weight is something that is very correlated with a person's income, there is a risk that having obesity could be seen as signalling being lower income. But mass adoption is underway, and that will change things. Early man first invented tools, then he invented jewellery. Archaeologists have discovered strings of shells believed to have been necklaces or earrings that are 150,000 years old, more ancient than the development of language. The urge to use your appearance to signal ways in which you are distinct from others is one of humanity's oldest impulses. People have sent different signals over time and across cultures. Sometimes the impulse for change is the discovery of a newer, shinier material. Small shells were replaced with gold beads and later diamonds. The high-status beauties of the Renaissance were the voluptuous ladies painted by Rubens. Then the Industrial Revolution made food more affordable for the masses, and a leaner look became more desirable. Had Malthus, who in 1798 predicted populations would soon be imperiled by food constraints, been right, fatness would surely still be in vogue. Weight loss drugs will probably be responsible for the next big change, and it will not be the creation of Stepford dystopia. Thinness is desirable now because it sends a signal that one has the time to work out, the money to afford healthy foods, and the education to know what diet to follow. In low-income countries such as Malawi and Uganda, where food is scarce for poorer people, obesity is more desirable, as it was in the pre-industrial West. A study by Elisa Mackey of Brown University, carried out in these countries, manipulated images attached to loan applications and found that applicants who appeared obese had better access to credit. The economics of signalling was best articulated by Michael Spence, a Nobel Prize winner. In 1973, Mr. Spence developed a simple model of how the labour market works. There are two kinds of job candidate: good, high productivity ones, and bad, lazy ones. Potential employers do not know which is which. Applicants can acquire a degree, but this is hard. Bad candidates are unlikely to be able to do it. It is also costly for the good ones to acquire a degree. It takes time and money. In this model, even if there are no true benefits to education, good candidates will acquire degrees as a signalling device to let employers know they are strong candidates. Before Mr. Spence's paper, the thinking was that employers valued education because it improved productivity. Mr. Spence showed that there might be more to it. Would you rather have gone to Harvard to have studied, taken classes, made connections, and never be able to reveal it? Or would you prefer to have a piece of paper that says you went? A similar question gets to the truth about body types. Would you rather look slender and in shape, or would you want to actually be healthy? With their appearance, people are sending signals that have value in the job and marriage markets. But what if someone did not have to be rich or disciplined to be thin? A signal is useful only if it sends the right message. In Mr. Spence's model, the signal works only if a university education is difficult to attain and acquired only by strong candidates. Consider another example to see how fast the value of a signal can be lost. When email was new, it was clear that if one addressed you by name in the subject line or the text, a real person was trying to catch your attention. They had, after all, crafted a message just for you. Then it became possible for senders to name-check a long list of people with ease. For a time, email users were tricked. They clicked, expecting an important message, and instead received a generic ad. Yet they soon learned. In gossipy corners of the internet, a transformation in the perception of thin people is already underway. Posters on the NYC Influencer Snark subreddit, a forum dedicated to needling the poor taste of D-list, TikTok stars and Instagram influencers accuse any and everyone of being on the jab. Often this is idle chatter, but sometimes they provide evidence or receipts. 2 months ago, NYC Undercover, a habitual poster, published a screenshot of Serena Kerrigan, who has 217,000 Instagram followers, standing in front of her fridge. Not that any proof was needed, but she isn't even bothering to hide her Ozempic use now, they wrote, above an image annotated with a red arrow pointing to the telltale cap of a GLP-1 pen. As the medication must be kept cold to be effective, kitchen pictures and bruises on the abdomen, the typical injection site, have become the internet sleuth's way of figuring out who is on the drugs. Perhaps unsurprisingly, these posters are not pointing this out to be nice or to flatter users of the drugs for their new figures. It is a gotcha moment. In the jargon of economics, they are revealing that the signal the person is sending with their body is a false one. They did not get thin the hard way. Ozempic is not going to fix society and rid it of status games. Signalling that you are unique or better than others is hardwired into human nature. However, the idea that it might become easy to be thin suggests that thinness will lose some of its grip on the popular psyche. Something else will doubtless replace it. Perhaps it will be a fixation on muscles, which are more difficult to feign. Or perhaps the truly elite will be those who signal that they are above it all anyway, doing so with softer, middling body types. In many ways, this could be a blessing. The pursuit of thinness, especially for young girls, has come at a great cost. Contrary to what many seem to think, by making it easy for almost anyone to be thin, Ozempic might not only fix America's weight problems, it might also fix America's problem with weight.